Hi guys, welcome to another Deranged podcast. This is Matt.
And this is Ben.
And yeah, we're talking to you on a beautiful summer's evening.
Yeah. So we're all good. We're in a good mood. So we're ready to talk about some shit, aren't we?
Yes. Talk about some movies in a shit way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, you know, we've been deliberating about a format, and then you know, what kind of format do we really want to do? And you know, do we just stick to genre stuff, or do we talk about the other movies that we quite like as well? So
yeah, this is it. Yeah, and I think in the end, because there's so many films that kind of cross the genre barrier that we like as well, that we're always going to end up talking about stuff outside the horror genre.
As long as I think maybe as long as the movies are deranged in some way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
that's the criteria.
Yeah, nice tagline. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we had to get that tagline in there. Yeah. All right. Wicked. So you know, maybe not what you'd expect us to be talking about, but we're definitely going to be kicking off tonight with I think the movie of the fortnight, the film of the fortnight,
which
which is Four Lions.
How'd you get it? A wholesale shop down the road.
What, all from the same shop?
Yeah.
You mug, you'll get us nicked.
No. I use different voices every time I go in.
Different what? Different voices?
Different voices.
Show me.
What?
Show me the voices, come on.
And one of them's... Well, it's my voice.
Right.
Can I have 12 bottles of bleach, please?
Yeah, I know what that sounds like. Give me another one.
IRA voice.
IRA voice? They're terrorists, Fessel. What do you want to do a terrorist voice? You'll get us nicked.
Well, I'll be disguised then, won't I?
Yeah, but as a terrorist. Let's hear the voice.
Can I have 12 bottles of bleach, please?
Obviously, we picked this one for a reason, partly because down in Sheffield, partly because it's it's a great independent British film, and those are the sort of things that we should be supporting. And I think it's partly funded by Warp X as well, who do have their foot in the horror camp, so they're the ones who help produce Donkey Punch and Hush.
And also Four Lions is a Chris Morris movie, his first feature movie. And obviously he'd worked with Warp before. They did the short film before, which got a BAFTA. My Wrongs, blah blah blah.
I remember that. I haven't seen it though.
We saw it at Fright Fest, I think.
Did we?
Yeah, all those moons ago.
I can't remember.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. Yeah. Actually, I lie. Yeah, we saw it a 3-minute one of his at Fright Fest. I digress.
Right.
And My Wrongs. You might not have seen it. It had a talking dog in it.
Right, yeah.
Got a BAFTA. Hence, you know, they've got a good relationship, Chris Morris and Warp. And obviously when I first heard about this film, which was a couple of months ago, I got quite excited about it because anything Chris Morris does, I'm usually a big fan of, you know, from going back in the day to the day-to-day and Brass Eye on TV.
Yeah.
And obviously writing Nathan Barley, you know, bits and pieces like that. You know, he's consistently kind of Blue Jam as well, or Jam when it went on to DVD and on the TV. So, you know, he's consistently produced really interesting stuff. So I was really looking forward to seeing Four Lions.
Yeah, me too. I think something like Nathan Barley really, really did it for me. I thought just the humour just so off the wall, and Chris Morris consistently delivers. It's like one of these things where he seems to really mull over a project and really put a lot of thought into it.
I think so, yeah. I think it's really well researched.
That's it, because it's like everything that he does just comes across as really original and quite...
Well, that's what they're saying about Four Lions, aren't they? You know, I think there was on my Facebook, I kind of showed a few people, there's a clip from Calendar News when Four Lions first came out. And to cut a long story short, you know, basically at the end of the kind of the segment, this interviewer says to Chris Morris, obviously there's been a lot of people today that haven't seen your movie but are describing it as sick and offensive, and then Chris Morris just says, well, you know, there's loads of people out there who haven't seen my film. Yeah, they're kind of like criticising it, and it kind of proved the point again, you know. That's exactly what Chris Morris was aware of, and I think when you actually watch the film, it's a very different picture to what you think you're going to go in and go see.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I don't know, should we kick off and talk about a bit about the story?
Yeah, go for it.
And then we'll go into it. Okay, so Four Lions is set in Sheffield. Although Sheffield isn't overly subscribed as being part of it. In fact, I don't even know if it's mentioned once.
Actually, I agree with you, yeah. I think it's kind of there in the background. You notice it a couple of times that it's referred to. Obviously, if you're from Sheffield like we are, then there's loads of Sheffield in this film.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll talk a bit more about that later on, because it's an interesting addition to enjoying the film, I think, as well.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And it's all centred around these four guys who are Muslims who feel that forming an act of blowing up something, obviously, is part of their beliefs in getting them into paradise, into heaven, in effect. And that's what this is all centred around, is their plan to blow something up, and they're not quite sure what they want to do. And they do various things. They go off to a training camp in Pakistan, and they discuss various options of it. And in the end, you know, this isn't a film about Islam. This isn't a film about fundamentalism, really. This is a comedy, and the actual religion and the whole reason behind it is merely quite a backdrop to it, because this is a film that's entirely character based. If you've got four guys in there, one of them's a white convert, and you've got a couple of other guys in there who aren't quite the brightest sparks, and it's all about them. It's kind of a film about friendship as much as anything.
Yeah, it is. I don't know, you know, obviously I do like this film a lot, but you know, I will say that the characters are definitely two dimensional.
You think?
Yeah, I think probably the only guy that actually gets, you know, a full character given to them by the script is the lead. You know, I think he's a kind of a rounded character where you can see a few more dimensions to his personality. But I think the others are kind of a bit two-dimensional. Obviously, it's a comedy, and that kind of relies on you creating a character, and you go, okay, that character says the funny lines, and you know what I mean? It feels a little bit like that.
Yeah. I think Barry, the white convert in there, I think he certainly is a bit more fleshed out. You see him as, it's almost like the ironic thing that you got this white Muslim who's out there preaching for jihad, and to me, he certainly seems to be as much fleshed out as the lead character in there. But no, I totally take on board what you're saying, because the other characters in there, you don't really know much about them or any of the background. But I think that's part of this film, is you don't know why any of the guys in this film want to go and blow up something. You don't know why they want to declare this jihad. You don't know anything about them at all. And I think
just basically, there's always groups of guys, let's be honest. If you're a guy, you know, and you've got your mates, that's kind of a group of guys.
Yeah.
And essentially that's what this film is about, a group of guys. It just happens to be that rather than sitting around in the pub talking about football, they want to kind of make their mark in some way, and that's blowing something up.
Isn't
it, really? And you can take any religion out of the equation, that's the bottom line of what they're wanting to do. And it isn't that fleshed out, and there's relationships with the guy's wife, which you never really, I said to you earlier, I didn't really understand how that would happen, you know, his wife as well. You never really understand whether she's like happy for him to go and do it, because it gets her out of it gets him out of her life, or whether she's fully behind it as a cause.
Yeah,
you know, there's nothing there to gauge what she thinks of the situation either. So it's a really unique film. And I think if you're going in there to discuss deeper things, which obviously this film is going to want people to do, it doesn't actually offer any answers.
Yeah,
it's a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it wants people to discuss further things, though? I don't think it does. I don't think there's a particular debate about Islam or religion or
there's something in there. There's something in there in terms of how they treat their women. That was certainly covered a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really, really funny scene, actually. It's one of my favourite scenes in the film, where the lead character, I keep saying that, you've got to forgive me because I can't remember his name, but his brother comes in, and he's a bit more of a devout Muslim, isn't he?
Yeah.
He follows the code, and they have this argument. And, you know, and obviously one of the things he says is that he can't have a conversation with his brother while his brother's wife's in the room with them.
Yeah.
You know, and that, obviously that's, you know, that happens.
Yeah.
You know, and again, later on, you know, they have a water pistol fight, and, you know, the guy gets aggressive, and that's the point that they're making, that, you know, when you're squirted with water, you too become aggressive, no matter how many, you know, scriptures you've read you know, and he makes a point there as well, which I thought was quite cool. But yeah, I think there are talking points in that film, definitely.
Yeah, maybe so. Now you're saying it in that respect, then certainly there are points that are raised about it. I think it's because it's predominantly, I would say, in the background now, that the religion thing is in the background, that it's not something that will get you overly talking about, you know, the internets about of Islam or fundamentalism or anything of that nature. I think.
So let's get past that then.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Let's say what's good about it. Nothing to do with religion.
No, we should do. Yeah.
Okay. There's. I'm not going to ruin this for anybody, but yeah, people explode in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in a funny way and also in a poignant way as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so I think if you're going to explode, then you have to at least go let people think about it, which is what this does. In
yeah,
this film.
Gotta make
your mark.
it's gonna mean something, hasn't it? Yeah.
And I think they do. They're not wasted lives.
No,
I think, and then that's the success of the film in a way. You know that you know, unfortunately, some people don't make it, and there is reasons why to that. As
yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry for giving spoilers away.
No, well, you know, it's okay. I think you see enough of that in the advert anyway.
Yeah,
as a comedy, did you find it funny?
Yeah, it's not like a slap my thigh comedy. Yeah. I've got to be honest. No, it isn't at all. It's more chuckles along the way. But I've got to be honest. It's a little bit like watching, you know, the Christopher Guest films. Obviously, you know, Spinal Tap. You can watch that, and you're laughing all the way, basically, for the good 90 minutes of that film.
Yeah.
Obviously, no disrespect to Christopher Guest, because I really do like his work. But you watch his later films, and you know they're not like slap thigh kind of funny either. You know, there's one or two chuckles in those films, and I kind of see it in the same mould, where it's an observational comedy about a particular, you know, aspect or, you know, part of people, different people in culture, and then there's a few laughs along the way.
Yeah, no, I'd entirely agree with that. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there and very much. I mean, I still like films like Best in Show with Christopher Guest, and it's one of those. It isn't massively funny, but it's an enjoyable comedy, and I think this is what... I don't know where it's Komodo who was talking about this, but he was saying, I'm pretty certain actually that it was Four Lines that he was referring to, and he says, does a film have to make you laugh to be a comedy?
Yeah.
And this is kind of one of those films, just like a later Christopher Guest film is.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily make you laugh all the way through.
No, it doesn't.
But it still entertains and enthralls you and still makes you smile to some extent.
Yeah, and it gives you a window into another culture and another way of thinking, which you know is always quite interesting.
Yeah,
you know, it can be millions of miles away from what you personally think, but it's good to have that viewpoint sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of production, because this is where we had a bit of a giggle about it. Obviously, it's the first time I've spoken to you about it, Ben. But me and Will had a giggle about it. You know, if you're from Sheffield, you're going to be kind of having a different experience, I think, when you watch this film.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the film, the plot says that they go to London, these guys, and something happens in London. I don't want to give too much away, but bottom line is they didn't film anything in London, did they? To save a pretty penny, I think absolutely everything was shot in Sheffield. So if you're a Sheffield person and you're watching the film, you see Sheffield landmarks, you see down the back of the Wicker, which is supposed to be an alleyway in London.
Yeah.
And at one point, apparently, I didn't see it, but Wall tells me that there was even a sign for Sheffield in the back of one of the shots that was supposed to be in London.
Yeah.
And all the action takes place in the kebabish towards the end of the film.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Which is on the Wicker, as everyone knows it, in the area. So it'll be a different experience for Sheffield audiences, but you know, I don't think it mars the film.
No.
And I think if you're geographically ignorant, you'll probably get a little bit more out of it and think a bit more money was spent.
Yeah.
So you've got to give full marks to Mark Herbert, you know, doing a good producing job on that film and cutting a lot of corners to get it made on a budget, I think, was probably quite small.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, because I mean, I can't imagine how much it's cost, but I'd say barely just over $1 million or something.
I'd imagine that's probably the ballpark that they're dealing with. Yeah,
and I think in the end, with who's attached to it, even the notoriety it may get to some extent from the subject matter, it at least make that money back. And again, it's another sound investment that Warpex have done.
Yeah, and I don't want to advocate this at all, because obviously I think you should watch films in the correct way, which is at the theatre, and that's how I did see this, and I really enjoyed it. But I do think it really feels like it could have been shot and like shown on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's got that sort of quality to it. It's like, you know, it feels all handy cam, even though it isn't. You know, there's been a professional crew filming this, but obviously what I've thought was they've gone about it and done a controlled amateurism in terms of the production, and I think that really works. There's several shots outside in the street, isn't there, where it kind of wonky zooms into a house to show that's where these characters are and having a meeting and stuff, and, you know, it's like really amateur in terms of how it's done, but it gives it that kind of amateur footage, YouTube kind of generation.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if you stumbled across the whole film on YouTube, you'd think it was, you know, true.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, and it fits in quite well with the whole overall tone of the film, because if you think about these guys, they're not the smartest guys, that they are quite amateurish in the way that they're plotting what they wanted to do, and this kind of backs up that feeling. You imagine that with this film that you've got, that you're talking about, these guys who keep cocking everything up, doing everything wrong, and it's shot all glossy and nice sort of pans and zooms and sweeps with the camera, and it just wouldn't feel right in that respect, because it'd look out of place.
Yeah.
And so all this does is kind of reaffirm perhaps the whole overall tone of the story.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. So, many reasons to see this film. If you haven't, what was quite interesting is that I watched it second week. Obviously, I couldn't get to the premiere, but, you know, the opening night. But the week after, we got down there. And what was really interesting is, no, I'm not casting dispersions on the showroom, but when I asked for my ticket, a grin was cracked by the woman behind the counter, because there's huge queues. I think people in Sheffield really are flocking to see this film at the showroom, which is great for the showroom, it's great for the area.
Yeah.
So we've got to big up the South Yorkshire there as well.
Yeah, it is. And
it's an event.
Yeah, that's it. Films like this help our city, help the area, so we can't help but support it. So
get out there and see Four Lions.
Yeah.
We'll tear your soul apart.
It's been an interesting decade. We're going to start, obviously, with 2000 to 2010 now, because we're, you know, halfway through.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't think much has really been covered about the past 10 years, really, as far as horror's concerned.
No, not really. I guess to kick off, really, early on, really, was Dog Soldiers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was just on the cusp of the new decade, I believe. That came out. It caused, a bit of a storm. People really seem to like that film.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got your genre fans liking it, and you got your kind of people that wouldn't usually watch a horror movie liking it as well. So I think that was the reason why that was quite a successful film. Obviously, Neil Marshall's gone on to do The Descent in the same decade.
Yeah.
A much superior film in my mind. You know, I've got a lot of time for The Descent. I think that was a great film. Dog Soldiers, I really enjoyed. It was one of them sort of films where you could kind of see where things weren't working and where they were, and that, and it felt a little bit loose. But I certainly think he kept it really nice and tight with The Descent.
Well, if you think about Dog Soldiers as a debut, then I think it's pretty damn good debut,
it is,
really.
It is.
Because the actual, I think, overall and the general impression I get from
bottom
it...
Bottom line, I just didn't like The Wolves.
Oh, right. Yeah,
if they did a better job on The Wolves, I think it would have been much better fun. But it is a damn good
I don't have a problem with The Wolves, but I'm a bit like... I'm not too bothered. I know a lot of people think, oh, you should be doing American Werewolf style Wolves, and I don't mind whether it's like, you know, the guy in the ripped shirt walking about on 2 feet, or whether you get the American Werewolf Wolf. But I know what you mean. Mm. But I like.
You know, I think basically when you do a wolf, people have got their own different feelings about that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Clearly, obviously, we've had the Wolfman that's at the tail end of the decade.
Yeah.
So ironically, we're kind of beginning and ending with the Wolf movie.
Yeah.
But you know, people really lambasted that film for its interpretation of the old school Wolfman.
I think what I kind of liked about Dog Soldiers is that I found that it balanced the humour and the action and the horror reasonably well.
Yeah, it did.
And I think there's some good casting in there. Obviously, you've got Sean Pertwee and Kevin McKidd. And generally, I thought it all worked pretty well. Everything you hear about that story of the making of the film was that everybody had a great time on set. And I think that's certainly something that Neil Marshall seems to get across. He seems to create a great atmosphere on set. And I think that only really adds to his films.
Yeah, I agree. Right, we're moving on then to... American Psycho came out at the beginning of the decade as well.
Oh, right. Oh, well, that's one that we certainly shouldn't really... look over at all.
Yeah, it's worth a mention.
It is. Well, it is. Because if you think about the notoriety of that book before, and it was one of these that people were saying, this is an unfilmable film.
Yeah.
But yet, they did manage to pull
off. Yeah, they did. And a really interesting film that people talked about with the ending, and, you know, it kind of floated above a lot of kind of subpar material that came out at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, there is something to be said about American Psycho. I think it's certainly a good double bill with Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, I think people getting back into Wall Street with the sequel coming out this year. You know, watch American Psycho back to back. It'll give you a kind of interesting perspective of the
80s. Yeah. But I think that a lot of that film was held together by Bale's performance. So
it is. Right, okay. And then we got Shaun of the Dead was the kind of the one that kind of kicked it out of the ballpark, really.
Please pay attention. This message is for your own safety. Our nation is in crisis. A state of emergency has been declared. Should you find your safety compromised,
it is vital that you do not panic.
I always sound like a bitter kind of film review guy because I've got so much high opinion of stuff when it comes out, and it never fully meets that kind of that level of satisfaction for me. And then I go back and watch a movie a few more times and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a massive fan of Spaced. It really just caught a wave, that TV program. You know, you speak to people in America who love that love that show, so it shows the broad appeal of that TV show. You know, Edgar Wright really pulled all the stops out with a kind of meager TV budget to give TV something really different and interesting, and it spoke to film fans massively, that TV show. So I was really excited when Shaun of the Dead was up for coming out, and when it came out, I don't know, I just felt a little bit like maybe they'd done a bit of a deal with Working Title, and you know, it felt a little bit like they'd had to kind of push the zombie back and bring the comedy forward a little bit, and you know, bottom line, the rom-com annoyed me a little bit. But you know, in hindsight, I watched the film. It's a classic. I'm proud of that film.
Yeah,
I think it did a lot. We've got this year, we've had, coming back full circle to the end of the decade again, we've had two sort of imitators, and we've had Dog House. Lesbian Vampire Killers.
Yeah.
Both which I think are quite interestingly, they both take kind of place in a village in that as well.
This is it. Yeah. And it's with Shaun of the Dead. I've been listening to another podcast recently, Film Spotting, run by a couple of American guys, and Shaun of the Dead actually appeared on both of their top 20 films, if I remember rightly, top 20 films of the decade.
Yeah.
So that speaks massively about the crossover appeal that Shaun of the Dead has really got.
Yeah.
You know, crossover in the States. So. Yeah. You really can't fault it for the far-reaching effect it's had.
But yeah.
I'm a bit like you, who was somewhat underwhelmed by the film. Although you can't really fault it as
a film, in
a sense, but I think...
It probably just doesn't meet expectations. I think that's my only fault with it.
Yeah, that's
I think if you go in blindly and you hadn't seen Space, like the generation below us, who really love Shaun of the Dead, and then find Space afterwards, it's a different kettle of fish. They love that film.
It is, and when particularly you're hardened zombie fans like we are, then in the end, you've got to pull out some damn good shit, you know, if you're going to impress us with a zombie film.
Absolutely, and then I guess who did impress us massively was Alexandra Arger. With the hot tension.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Danny Boyle there. Wait a second.
Well, Danny Boyle in a bit, I guess.
Yeah, we'll come to Danny Boyle.
Yeah, but yeah, Arger came out with the hot tension. What a fucking blinding film that was. You know, when I was watching it about 10 minutes in or 20 minutes in, I was just like, I actually want to just watch the beginning again before I go any further into this film. So, you know, when that happens, that, you know, I'm really enjoying myself. I remember watching Blade back in the day and had that same feeling after that nightclub opening.
Yeah.
I just like wanted to go back and watch that opening before I watched the rest of the film. So, you know, I thought it was, again, that's like, you know, an auteur and a really stylish filmmaker that can make you feel like that when you've been kind of like mesmerised with the visuals, and the DP on and Hot Tension along with Alex Arger certainly did that, didn't they?
It's
a beautiful looking film.
It is, it is great, and it's funny you saying that about the opening sequence, and it is one of those films that you do almost want to study each sequence because you pick out some of the great things from a lot of the sequences. You imagine the scene where the guy enters the house at the first and ends up killing all the family, and there's so many beautifully crafted shots and death sequences that you really want to not lose a minute of the film. And really, it's like that all the way through. I think
which is obviously down to the fantastic special effects by Ginetta De Rossi.
Yeah, there is. Just play a big part.
Come on, we got to big up the De Rossi.
Yeah.
Whenever you can. But yeah, High Tension, great film, man. Or Switchblade Romance, as you know it. You know, we talk further about this film on one of the vlogs that we've done for YouTube and MySpace, so check it out in terms of French New Horror. So we'll omit Inside and Martyrs, although I'd love to talk about Martyrs again, and a few other French movies that came out. We'll let you discover that podcast for our opinions on that. But then we've got Dawn of the Dead and Danny Boyle. Kind of more or less back to back. Let's give Danny Boyle his credits. He came first.
Yeah, he did, and I think there's a lot of good things about 28 Days Later that you can take from it. Going back to it now, he probably doesn't seem anywhere near quite as effective as perhaps it was at the time.
No, but it kicked off the whole slew of interest in the zombie film.
Yeah, but not only the zombie film, but also digital video as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
And he really did something there with that, because it really, you know, there's other films that we saw around the time. I think I remember seeing Session 9, and I think we thought that was shot on DV.
Yeah.
But that was one that came straight to video, and this is one that goes to the
big screens.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, obviously because it's got Danny Boyle's name attached, and he ultimately could have shot it in the conventional way. He just chose to shoot it on the Canon cameras at the time, which is, you know, a big thing for independent film scene in the UK and obviously, you know, abroad, because, you know, we're all digital filmmakers, you know, and it showed us that, you know, you can make a feature film on digital and, you know, and get it into the market, really.
Yeah, you can, and it almost feels to some extent like an experiment for the guy.
Yeah.
And it's I think it was coming off the back of him making The Beach as well, which is really, he's probably, and I think before that, and he made the That shit with Ewan McGregor in as well, that I can't remember the name of. Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz.
I remember the one I'm talking about.
That's the one. Yeah, so imagine it's coming off two...
Kind of unsuccessful, mediocre movies.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah. And so you wonder how much of this film was perhaps, oh, fuck it, I'll just, you know, I'll just take a chance on something.
Yeah.
But then it just... made, you know, just created a huge wave, didn't
it? Yeah, it did. And obviously that branched out to America, who kind of ran with it, which was Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Now, I remember I've been fortunate enough to meet, you know, as part of a convention, Ken Forey, and he talked about, you know, people coming up to him when he was in a trailer saying, hey, they're making Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, what? I don't know fuck all about this. You know what I mean? So, you know, and it was all kind of, you know, last minute his involvement in it, which was basically like a cameo.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that they did that, because, you know, Dawn of the Dead is Ken Forey, really. Yeah, I don't know. I do like the remake, and I think it's a damn good film.
Yeah.
And if I was going to think of any remake, which is what this decade is all about, essentially, that actually was good, it's the Dawn of the Dead, really.
Yeah, it is. We were really surprised about that film, weren't we? How slick it was and how well it was shot. And there's that beautiful shot at the beginning, the overhead bit with the car coming into the suburbs. And then later on, again, you get that beautiful overhead shot of the truck crashing into the petrol station. And really, really, you know, it's the sort of stuff that Romero couldn't pull off, but he did, just to show you how big this problem was.
Yeah, I think that's it. It gives it gravitas, doesn't
it? Yeah.
And it opens that picture up. And there's some great scenes, isn't there, where there's hordes of zombies, like, you know, kind of trying to push that... Dead Reckoning vehicle, isn't it? Dead Reckoning.
Yeah.
Push it over, you know, there's a fantastic scene with the chainsaw. There's a lot of really good gags in the Dawn of the Dead remake as well. And, you know, it rattles along at a great pace. And if you were to sit down and do the Romero trilogy, you could quite, you know, or quadrilogy now with Land, I think it sits quite nicely with Land, actually.
It does,
you know,
yeah.
It's part of that experience. So, you know, you've got to give him credit for that, Snyder, you know. He did a good job in getting in with the fans and creating a really interesting film.
Yeah, and one thing, just when we were talking about characters earlier, if you think about the amount of characters in Dawn of the Dead, and really, it should have been a total clusterfuck, and you got no idea who any of these people are, but really, you get to know a little bit about each of them, and it just fleshes them out enough so that you care about them, or, you know, you want one of these guys to snuff it, and they even do a bit where a guy kind of changes his tune halfway through, and then you start buying into him as a character, and so
it's really well cast, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That's perhaps the thing, that's perhaps a lot of it down to the acting, because in the end, you know, Zack Snyder, he's pretty much he's all gloss. He is. All gloss. Yeah. But
I think he hit it well with the casting of that, because like, you know, they're all delivering kind of scripted lines, but because of the casting, they kind of do it well.
Yeah,
do it with conviction, and you kind of buy into it, like, you know, Sarah Polley's character.
You're
kind of with her on the ride, aren't you?
Yeah,
I think that's it as well. You really follow her through this film. You know, your eyes are opened through her, and I think that really works well for the film, especially the opening sequence of it.
And I'll tell you what, perhaps the balance that was found well enough there was all the performances were reasonably understated.
Yeah.
So there wasn't some guy who kind of come out above everybody else because he hammed up his performance or because he had some killer scene. They were all kind of on a par there. Yeah. And when you're dealing with a film where you got a lot of characters to get over, then that works.
Yeah,
it does. And if you compare it to perhaps something like Resident Evil, where you knew fuck all even about the main character, and yet there's like hundreds of bloody characters in that film that you know nothing about.
Well, that's it. I mean, we might as well bring Resident Evil franchise in here. I mean, that's exactly, we've had that over the last decade as well. You know, I've got to be honest, I enjoy them.
Yeah, well, I don't.
And also, I'm a major fan of the game as well. So it's not like I'm like, this guy just enjoys the film. I really do love the game. I'm just not like a puritan about the game.
Yeah.
I understand that the films and the games are completely separate entities. They have to be to coexist. And that's the deal that from the games makers when they make the films, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, I'm not under no illusion that there should be the same kind of experience. And I think once you get your head around that, then they're quite enjoyable films.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I'm not too sure how I feel about the new fourth version coming out soon in 3D. I saw the trailer and, the quality is fantastic, but it's like,
I haven't seen the trailer for that yet.
I want my Resident Evil in that kind of light? Almost, it feels, I don't know, maybe Resident Evil is the perfect film for this vehicle. Because, you know, it feels like a game. It's surreal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, perhaps it'll work in that respect. Perhaps it will, but I always felt that the last Resident Evil Extinction, or whatever the hell it was called, that was so... It was almost like phoning in a bloody performance for that film.
It was, but it was probably my favourite.
Really? Oh, man.
It's the Russell McCulloch one.
I don't know. The one in the desert.
Yeah. By the same guy who did the Wild Boy video and all that business, the Duran Duran stuff, Highlander and all that. I really like that.
No, I don't mind it. I much prefer the second one. I think it's probably my favourite.
But they didn't really do much on the radar, did they? Resident Evil films.
They seem to have certainly been dropping off a bit.
One little film that we need to go back to, which I really enjoyed when it first came out, is Jeepers Creepers.
What's he doing?
The hell is that? He dumped something down that pipe.
Wrapped in a sheet. Is your idea of a little adventure?
I'm just gonna look.
You know the part in scary movies where somebody does something really stupid and everybody hates them for it? This is it.
It's just such a cool film, and it really had that feel of a late 70s, early 80s film. Obviously, the twist in the middle kind of did throw me a little bit, and I was like, whoa, I thought I was watching one film and now I'm watching something else. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd very much so. And I it would have been good to see if they just kept with that first bit of the film and perhaps followed that through, what sort of film you'd end up getting there. Yeah. But then I don't think it would have been quite the big film that it would
agree,
have been.
I agree, I think they agree. Obviously, the two shock twists of the decade in terms of genre, Jeepers Creepers and Haunted Tension.
Yeah.
It totally works for Jeepers Creepers because it does, like you say, creates a different film, a different mentality and, like, you know, a different character and a different avenue, whereas the other one could have been so kind of generic at the other end.
Yeah.
And then you've got Haunted Tension, which is a shocking ending and completely ruins the film.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's very difficult to find that balance. And I'll tell you, there's a couple of films that have just sprung to mind when you've said that about Jeepers Creepers, and one of them is Dead End, which I really love that film, and that's one that kind of sticks to its principles and what it's doing, and it kind of like, right, this is what we're going to do, it's going to be simple, there's going to be no major twists, it's just going to be straightforward, we're driving along this road and people are getting picked off and you don't really know what's going on, and that never changes gear, but that still, I thought, had a great, really took me in and kept me hooked for the whole way through.
Mm. Do you remember Identity?
I love Identity.
Yeah, was that, are we talking still this decade, are we?
Yeah.
See, that's making me think of Identity, another great film. You know, a lot of people gave that film a bit of stick when it came out, but a thoroughly interesting script, really well realised. And, you know, kind of remind me of an old school type of film that you might find on your TV on a Saturday night in the 80s, you know what I mean, like 80s or whatever. So I really enjoyed Identity. That's certainly one to include there when you're talking about the decade. You've got, moving on to Rob Zombie, because he sort of kind of kicked in around the beginning of the decade as well. It's a weird one, Rob Zombie. It is that kind of old love-hate. You know, as an artist, I kind of respect him. I don't have any Rob Zombie albums or anything, but what I've heard, I quite liked.
Yeah, I love White Zombie. Back in the day, I was a big White Zombie fan. I think, his music, I can really get into.
Yeah, as a filmmaker, obviously, kind of stepped up. And anybody who wants to make movies so bad that they just go and make them, I fully commend. And I think, obviously, on the underground, with the kind of genre fans, that's exactly what they tapped into as well, was this the kind of musician who basically used a little bit of who he was as a musician to help him get a film off the ground, you know, and he got it together and he made this film, and basically no one was picking it up at all, were they? It was a real film that sat on the shelf for a while, for one reason or another that probably only Rob Zombie could tell you, but it eventually got released, didn't it, a few years later, stateside, and then came over in the UK.
Yeah, House of a Thousand Corpses, and it was one of those films that we found it via nefarious means, didn't we? And I think House of a Thousand Corpses is probably my favourite of his films, to be honest.
See, I find it the hardest to watch.
It
brings you back to that argument, you know, fully commended for doing it, but it just feels like a one overlong music video a little bit, with some quite annoying performances in it as well. So I was never a big, Corpses fan.
Well, no, I'm not, but then I'm not a big Rob Zombie as a filmmaker fan anyway.
Yeah, and then obviously within that time, or a few years later, Devil's Rejects kind of came out pretty quickly after, didn't it?
Yeah.
That was like with studio interest after he'd done A Boy Done Good with his Corpses film.
Yeah.
You know, we'll give him this. But, again, Devil's Rejects, one of the only movies that I just got frustrated with at the end where, you know, they kind of take the time out to basically film some...
Play fucking Freebird.
Yeah, and film some, like, you know, Wonder Years type footage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's how you're suddenly supposed to care for these fucking horrible characters.
Yeah.
And that annoyed me and took me out of the film. But, yeah, bits of Devil's Rejects I like, but the whole thing isn't...
And I think with Devil's Rejects, the pacing is very, very off and on. Sometimes you get some really fast scenes, sometimes it just slows it down where you're building up tension, and the pacing just seems ridiculously off a lot of the way through, and I think that's kind of one of the things that threw me. And I think it's always difficult when you've got characters that you can't really buy into in a film, not buy into, but you can't really sympathise or empathise with, and when you're dealing with a bunch of hoodlums and killers like you've got here, then it is difficult to get into the film and really, I don't know, that's what I found. I mean, I enjoyed, like, empathising with bad guys in films. I love it. That perhaps it's that side of me that perhaps think, you know...
Well, that idea totally didn't work for Halloween, did it?
No.
You know, again, he wanted to create a character that you could see while he was who he was. You know, this it's quite ironic, isn't it, that we spend a lot of time saying, oh, you know, abuse doesn't lead to other abuse necessarily, and you know, watching horror films doesn't make you want to go out and kill people. And then you make Halloween, and you say, "Yeah, this poor little kid had this trash family, and that's what made him this sort of killer." And you know, really should have done that with Michael Myers. He should have just been like an entity that we didn't really know anything about.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes Halloween as good as it is in the original sense, in that, you know, nothing about this guy. He's got this supernatural quality, and that makes him, you fear him even more, because he seems like he's indestructible. But in the remake, it's some fucking kid who likes Iron Maiden, and it perhaps takes it away from there. It's almost like turn it into a fucking TV drama or something like that. And for me, that never worked. It's, these guys need to have this supernatural element for you to know, fear them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So, really, Rob Zombie, by the end of the decade, I think still needs to make that film that kind of everyone agrees is a good film.
Yeah, that's
it. If we're being honest,
yeah,
that's kind of how we feel. I tell you, someone else in the same camp was Rodriguez and Tarantino with Grindhouse.
Yeah.
They obviously thought it was a really good idea. You know, people on the underground thought it was a great idea, and a lot of buzz for this film before it came out. And I think everyone realised, or they found out, that it cost $31 million or $70 million or something.
Yeah, it's something stupid, isn't it?
It's some stupid amount of money to make, and it's kind of like, well, what's the point? What's the point of doing a Grindhouse movie on such a budget?
Yeah.
But it came out. It was a bit of a flat bum note. The trailers were really probably the best thing about the film. And then if you're going to choose a film, it's probably going to be Planet Terror that you watch again.
Oh, by far and away.
All in all, it wasn't the great event that we all thought it was going to be.
I think what this showed for me is that Rodriguez is generally a better filmmaker than Tarantino, if I'm honest.
In terms of entertainment or perhaps understanding the brief.
Well, I think certainly entertainment-wise, I think he's less self-conscious than Tarantino, is less egotistical, and I think that was one of the big problems with Death Proof, in the when you're in there and you're just self-referencing you're banging on about fucking who the hell knows about Vanishing Point outside of film fans, and that's a problem with it when you got a conversation, 5-minute conversation
about a film Vanishing that a very small Point, section of society has seen.
How's that going to work for me? If I'm not right into films, I'm never going to buy into it. And at least Rodriguez can kind of take a step back, and he kind of knows what he wants to do. Yeah. And I've got a lot of time for
tackled
Rodriguez.
Tackled the brief, I think.
He did.
Didn't use it as a vehicle to forward the fifth Tarantino film or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, that's it.
So, don't get me wrong, I've got a lot of time for Tarantino. I like his films.
I think
the Grindhouse verses... Yeah. You've got to give Rodrigo the upper hand there.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
Yeah. So, also was Wreck. Now, we've already talked a lot about liking Wreck, so we'll just say, we really like Wreck.
Yeah, we do, yeah. If you ain't checked it out, check it out.
Yeah, probably on the other podcast.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So there you go. If you can't listen to the other podcast, go back and listen to it.
Now, we're skipping forward a bit, because we've got Let the Right One In.
You're a vampire. Had you checked on me then?
Now, obviously, I'm in the minority here, where I just think it's an okay film, because I know people are loving this film and lapping it up everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm just clearly wrong, aren't I, Ben?
Well, I won't say that you're wrong. I mean, what is it that you didn't like about it?
If I'm being honest, I think the pace.
Everything. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it had pacing issues.
Yeah, it does, absolutely.
But I think also, once you know you're watching that kind of film... I think you're probably really enjoying it.
That's the truth.
It's a film I need to reassess. I have only seen it once, and it was after a long day at work, I think. And
yeah,
I think
you slide through part right now. Yeah, but it is one. It's if you're going in there thinking you're going to see a vampire film, and vampire films in general do have a very fast pace to it, then you're not going to see that. What you see in here is it's like a channel drama. It's about friendship, and it's about really. As much a kitchen sink drama, if you like, than a vampire film. And you've got to bear in mind as well that what we're doing is with this film is adapting from a book, so that again will lend itself to having pacing issues, in that you need to obviously cover the ground in the book, but then you need to make it entertaining at the same time as well. So for me, it's a film that I've got a real lot of time for. I think
I remember really liking the kind of the atmos of the film.
Yeah, very much.
It's very atmospheric. I've got to give it points there. And also, some of the CG was really subtly done.
Yeah,
it kind of made you think, have I seen that or haven't I seen that? Real subtle morphing effects going on here and there, which I can only really think that Asian film Circle, or what was it called? Spiral. You ever seen that?
It was a Mackie.
Yeah. Kind of the same sort of thing where you
nothing fucking subtle about that.
Yeah,
film,
where you're checking the frame to see what's going off in
the
corner.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
it had that same sort of vibe about it. So, in those respects, I do really like Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
I just, I'm quite interested to see the new Hammer version of Let Me In. You know, usually people go, oh, they're spitting on me from a high, I'm sure. Yeah. But, you know, I am quite interested to see how they're going to westernise what is essentially a very of its culture sort of film.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, I think that they probably might even drop the ball before they even run with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am interested to see how they're going to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Let the Right One In is a good and worthy addition if we're talking about the kind of the tops of the decade, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another one, which is Saw. The original Saw.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we've got to talk about it because it's been probably the biggest franchise of the decade. Mm. The original one, I really, really liked. I thought it was really original. And didn't see the ending coming. And really liked the music.
Yeah.
And really liked the style. Thought some of the acting was a bit ropey. More so, not the writer. I thought he was quite a competent sort of actor. The other blonde-haired guy who's in it.
Oh, Cary Elwes.
He was really bad in the film, if I'm being honest. Yeah. But it kind of, you know, I think had they had another actor in that place, it would have been a different league of film.
Yeah.
I think he kind of makes it very much kind of like straight to video or whatever.
But
they didn't. They got it out in the theatres. Despite that, and the advertising we had over in the UK was Dare You See Saw.
Yeah.
It was really, really a good marketing campaign. It got a lot of people talking about it before it even opened.
Yeah.
And I think me and Layla, we both went to see it on the opening weekend and, you know, we're really kind of like excited about seeing this film. So the original one, when it came out, I think fully delivered. Do you not agree?
Yeah, no, I do like the original one. I think it's good. I think it's reasonably claustrophobic. What I'd have loved to have seen is just the entire film set just in the room with the two guys.
But we'd seen kind of films like that with Cube and, you know, a couple of other things.
Yeah, but I fucking love those films. Yeah, why not?
I get a bit claustrophobic if we're in the same spot for too long. So.
Yeah.
But no, it's good. It's certainly explored that.
Yeah. It's just a shame the rest of the films are so awful.
You kind of, yeah, if we're being honest. I've watched them and seen them and owned them.
I think the problem with that is you film Saw on a small budget, they throw a load of money at you and then you just say, oh, I can go out and just do anything I want.
Well, to be fair, I think the guys, they had some involvement with one of the sequels, didn't they? But the original writers and whatever you put. You know, pretty much it was kind of Lionsgate that ran with that budget.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, fair play to them. They bring one out every year, I believe this year. The year of 3D, 2010.
Yeah.
The Saw 7.
Saw 7.
Saw 7.
Seven Jaws. Saw films.
Jaws only got to 3 before it got 3D-ized. Was it 4?
Yeah.
It was 4 3D.
No. Jaws 3D with Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Jaws the Revenge with Michael Caine.
Yeah, and it was Friday the 13th part 3. That had the 3D. It was Amityville
3D. Yeah.
So why does Saw take it to 7?
Yeah, because it didn't have 3D. Yeah. Well, 3D wasn't cool back then.
Yeah, okay.
Saw 3.
Yeah. So there you go. Saw 7 3D. I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the year. Another movie that came out, which I really wanted to like but didn't, was Slither.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
James Gunn had done a really good screenplay for the Dawn of the Dead remake, and I think everyone was quite excited to see what this guy was going to do next. And I don't know. I really want to love it. It's got Michael Rooker in it. I fucking love that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, no one's as good as Michael Rooker in a particular film. You know what I mean? He's brilliant. But yeah, again, I'm not a big fan of Sliver.
No.
Yeah, I should have done.
Yeah, it is. It looked like it could have achieved so much. It was almost, it's almost in the Stuart Gordon Reanimator side of humour and
that's
horror.
Right. I really wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But then Hen and Lotter in there.
Yeah, well, that's it. And then in the end, you kind of realise that the only guys who can really do comedy and horror are Stuart Gordon, Brian Usner, Sam Raimi.
Well, I know, I'm sure I'm wrong here, I'm just overanalyzing it, but it kind of feels a bit like, you know, there's James Gunn's going, I'm going to reference this film and I've seen this. And he really hadn't seen that much.
Yeah, that's it.
He wasn't this genre fan turned filmmaker that we thought he was.
Yeah, of course.
Probably only seen a handful of the films that are now being accredited to it. And he said at the time he'd never even seen He didn't understand the comparisons between that and Cronenberg's movies, which is, there is a comparison.
Shivers.
In terms of the slugs.
Yeah.
Said he hadn't seen Night of the Creeps, you know, which again, yeah, you know, his real kind of references to. So, you know, it was a weird one. But yeah, it came out. It did some business. Ju-on came out, which you might want to bang on about.
お化け屋敷があるから行ってみようって。お化け屋敷？あの家でまた人が死にました。僕、名前は何て言うの？トシオ。亭主の佐伯武雄が妻の佳代子を自宅で殺害。この男の子、5年前に行方不明になったまま見つかっていないんです。沈みが映ってる写真が1枚もないんだって。どうなってんの？徳永夫妻の前にもあの家に住んでいた家族や関係者が死んだり失踪したり。3人がね、覗くの。
何度も言ったんですよ。あの遺体の、あの子誰なんですか？何があったんですか？何か！ジュオン。
Ju-on and the Ring, which I think were great films. The really for me the Ring certainly we saw this on a on I think when before all the hype, didn't we? We saw it quite early
on the
Ring when it came out.
And to be fair, that was the kind of the movie of the decade, really.
It was
first part of the decade.
It was very much so.
There was hairs on the back of our necks watching that
film. Yeah, that's it. And then after that really kickstarted my love affair with Asian horror, and a lot of the time I just went and bought films from there without particularly knowing much of them. And one of them was the original Ju-on. Now this was Ju-on. This wasn't the Grudge film. Ju-on was a TV movie effectively, and I bought this off eBay, and some kid had put, you know, if you like The Ring, you'll love this. And man, that film really scared the shit out of me. It really did. I was really.
The meowing kid.
Yeah, that's it. The meowing kid. Like, you know, if he just could come in a picture film. Yeah, I got this film where this kid meows, and it scares everybody. And it
does.
Yeah, but the funny thing, that film, there's absolutely nothing to it as far as plot or anything like any sort of character or anything. I ain't got a fucking clue who anybody is in that film. I haven't. It's all just one horror set piece after another. When you're talking about tightly wound, well-directed horror set pieces, then Ju-on really nails it. It does. And, you know, I could pick it apart all day, but in the end, if you want to learn how to direct a scene and build up tension and deliver, then that's a good film to watch.
Who is that? Who's in there?
Jigsaw killer.
Paul, find a path through the razor wire.
Technically speaking, he's not really a murderer. He never killed anyone.
Dr. Gordon, your aim in this game is to kill Adam. If you do not, then Diana will die.
He finds ways for his victims to kill themselves.
I'm sick of people who don't appreciate their blessings. I've given you a life purpose.
Looks like our friend Jigsaw likes to book himself front row seats to his own sick beings.
He doesn't want us to cut through our chains. He wants us to cut through our feet.
Most people are so ungrateful to be alive. Not anymore.
So, films like Hostel and the later Saw films did kickstart. It's somewhat brief. Flirtation with this whole idea of torture porn, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a couple of years, wasn't it?
Died a death, really.
Yeah. but you know, a few years, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There were some really awful films that came out during that time, and I remember there's one period within a set of about 3 or 4 weeks, or about 3 of these fucking films, and, you know, Captivity and some other Paradise Lost or some shit like that. And none of them had any sort of redeeming qualities at all, other than, you know, this isn't how you make a film. I remember Captivity, how awful that film is.
And it came from the guy who brought us The Killing Field.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, people are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what's
where
up with
did that?
That
come from? Yeah, no, interesting.
Yeah, that's just wrong on so many
Roland Joff or something?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But crazy decision filmmaking there. But it did have what's the name from
Alicia Cuthbert. Yeah, on 24.
That's a bonus, man.
Yeah, Jet Bauer's daughter.
Yeah, come on, it's a bonus. But yeah, you know, I don't know where we're going now. Obviously, right at the end of the decade, we've had all this, and then the new thing is right back where we were right at the beginning of the decade. Ironically, with the Blair Witch Project, is Paranormal Activity. And again, that's a movie that's come full circle with that decade where it's come out of nowhere, it's cost fuck all to make, and it's made loads of money for the studios. Originally, when they got hold of the tape, they were like, we got the rights to remake it, and it was Spielberg. It's like, fuck it, just put it out there on the big screens, let it do its thing, just kind of tweak it here and there, and, you know, I think there's a different ending as well.
Yeah.
You know, and see what it does, and, you know, it's been fucking massive.
Yeah.
it's one of them films that when you're a filmmaker, you're like, ah, okay, if only it was that easy.
Yeah.
You know, they go out in the woods and do a really lo-fi movie with some people that swear a lot, or you stick a camera in a room with two people who don't swear,
yeah,
and nothing much happens, and either way you've got kind of box office gold, really.
Yeah, and I think that's another one, perhaps our marketing plays a big point in this.
Yeah.
I remember the marketing behind Blair Witch was really massive at the time. Yeah. I remember getting really into it before it came out, and when I saw it I was like, man, is this it?
Yeah.
You know? And Paranormal Activity, I think, was another one where I knew a bit about it, that it got a lot of hype, but then, you know, I consider myself really quite seasoned when it comes to horror filmmaking now, and I didn't really hold, I don't know, I guess I was curious is more than anything. When you see something, a horror film that's kind of got mainstream appeal, my expectations seem to drop. Yeah. Some, you know.
It's definitely worth more on the underground scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you hear about something on the underground, you know, you really are kind of like, okay, you know, yeah. That's quite interesting. Yeah, perhaps to mention, although we've not seen it yet, but it kind of runs in this year, is The Human Centipede.
Yeah.
So, you know, perhaps that's where the new decade is going.
Yeah.
You know, we're finding more interesting and weird ways of exploring the genre, really.
Yeah.
The idea of The Human Centipede is exactly what it is when the image you conjure up in your head. That's exactly what it is. and that's what's curious about the title. And indeed, you know, as much as it's rubbing a few feathers at the moment, actually I'm quite curious to see it.
Yeah. Perhaps body horror is making a bit of a comeback,
maybe. This is what the new decade brings. In terms of the genre, anything else this year that really sort of represents where we might be going? We need to mention The Devil of the Decade.
The Devil of the Decade.
What's his name? Remake Master.
Oh, what? Michael Bay. Michael Bay, yeah.
So, yeah, he kind of stomped around in this decade quite a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Created a company called Platinum Dunes. They ripped off all the great horror icons of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
No, they didn't do Michael Myers. They did Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
They did Amityville House. They did, yeah, exactly, Texas Chainsaw. And finally, they've done...
Did they do Last House as well?
I don't know if they did Last House or not, maybe, I don't know.
Some other tosser did that, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously now we've got Nightmare on Elm Street, which by all account is a load of shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll talk more about that later on.
Yeah, so
that brings us very nicely to our next segment, but for now, fuck off.
We get it almost every night when they're